Hello, Fightful Faithful. Welcome to a special episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks-ish. I mean, not this episode. This episode's about the Fire at Funhouse match at WrestleMania, which did not suck. It sucked the least amount of anything that's ever not sucked. There was the absence of suck. This is a sweet graps episode, except for the fact that I want to put into context where I'm coming from in my time at Fightful, RE regarding Bray Wyatt, and where he's coming from going into the Firefly Funhouse match with John Cena. I thought I'd give you all a little treat. We're going to do a retro epic triggered rant from 2017. I want to take it back 3 years ago. Gosh, we were so young then. The world wasn't as much of a flaming pile of virus-covered shit. But the match in question, of course, is the match between Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, in which Randy Orton, if you remember, had like been brainwashed kind of into joining the Wyatt family. He won the Royal Rumble, and then he swore he would not challenge Bray. After the Royal Rumble, Bray won the WWE title at Elimination Chamber. And Randy said that he would not face Bray at WrestleMania. He was going to abdicate the Royal Rumble victory. And then a few weeks later, he burned down Sister Abigail's house. Like, I guess, kind of. It was foggy. It was really bad creative. So he turned on Bray in the most personal way possible. And so then they had to have that match, you know. It was for the soul of – it was like a Sister Abigail's spirit on a pole match. Bray lost. It was bad. It was a terrible match. It was a really bad match. But it also – the biggest problem with it is that it proved that creative had no idea what they were doing with Bray Wyatt. And that if he was ever going to get out of this horrible funk they had him in, where he would, you know, use his magical powers to be spooky, and then nothing. He just lose. So Bray Wyatt was going to have to be the guy to pull himself out of that. To show you just how fed up I was at the time with the shitty booking of one Bray Wyatt, I decided I would go take a walk down memory lane and show you a little, about a 4 minute clip of me being furious 3 years ago last week. So, bon appetit.
Alex, your thoughts?
One of the worst things ever at ever any WrestleMania or any wrestling event ever. Listen, this is so, so terrible. My God, it was so terrible.
It was excruciating for 10 minutes.
It was so, so, so bad. It was so bad. Listen, when the maggots showed up, the first one, I was like, what? What is this power doing? Like, oh, look, Randy Orton, he's so freaked out by this. And then he's again with worms. I'm like, worms, not worms. Don't use your dark magic powers on me, Bray Wyatt, and put worms in the ring. I'm scared of worms. Who thinks that? Who thinks that's a good idea? Who came up with this shit? It's awful. It's awful. And here's the thing. It's even worse because he pulled out all of his crazy, magical, satanistic powers. And what did it get him? Another fucking loss. It's bullshit. You can't do this to this guy. It's like, it was an amazing thing where he was kidnapping Kane and Undertaker last year. And then he took them away. He and his buddies took them away, and they put them somewhere where they could easily escape because they showed up again with no fanfare and nothing. And then at one point, he was conjuring lightning out of it, like for Undertaker's powers, and then that went away too. And it led to him losing to Kane and Undertaker. You can do a lot of things with this guy who's clinically insane enough to believe he is a god and therefore has zero fear and cannot feel pain. And he will just keep coming at you with a sadistic smile on his face. That's something you can do. That's realistic. This thing, that he's a goddamn fucking necromancer who bathes in the ashes of his dead sister, I don't know what to do with that. That doesn't make any sense. It's completely bizarre. And you're ruining this guy because he has to go out there all week and give these interviews about how he thinks this is going to be the biggest match of the night and it's going to be so great. People are going to be talking about it. And I guarantee you, Bray Wyatt knows in his heart of hearts, this is going to be shit. And I got to go out there and do this dog shit. And I'm
going to say, He needs to say something because this happens all the time. And his superpower now is that he got a B- in his high school audiovisual class. That's it. That's his superpower now
is that he gave the video guy, the guy who runs the light board, he slipped him a 20 and says, hey, when I do this thing where I do the thing where I lean back on the turnbuckle, push play on this, on the projector.
Well, that's what Randy Orton is Snick.
It wasn't even just a lean back, though. He gave himself a bump to the ring, a really hard bump to the ring, just to get the maggot effect up.
Yeah,
maybe we're missing the whole point of this. Maybe the whole storyline of he went crazy, this is just him going crazy, but a really lame version.
There was so much potential in this storyline with Randy Orton, like saying, I don't want to fight you. I'm not going to do that. And then have Luke Harper legitimately, because he did, win the Battle Royal to become number one contender. And then have Randy say, no, Bray, I'm going to be there with you. And I am going to look out for you. And then have Randy turn on Bray in the match tonight in the triple threat. That's a much better thing than having him burn down a house for no fucking reason. Like, it just...
Hey.
Oh, God. It's so bad.
Oh, okay, okay. Let's move on.
Why didn't they put Harper in this?
Let's move on.
Fine.
Let's move on, for the love of God. Fine.
Hello, welcome back. Yeah. I guess I can clean up good. That was Mania 33. And I hope you can see through that my epic triggered rants aren't necessarily a new thing. It's something that I've done for a while. It's what got me this show. Also, I hope you can see that I've been invested in this Bray Wyatt character for a while. It's something that not just him, but creative shit in wrestling, smart shit, good shit, and the guys who consistently can deliver it or have the potential to, if they aren't being, you know, held down by the man. In this case, the man does not refer to, like, you know, society as a whole, but like one particular man, whose name is Vincent. But yeah, that was a rough time for Bray. Now most of the Firefly Funhouse match itself, which I promise we will get into, deals with WrestleMania 30 and his loss to John Cena, but it is the beginning of the end for him, because after he loses this match to Cena, which had been all built up for him to come out on top, then he has a program with The Undertaker from Mania 31, which we all know he's going to lose, because, obviously, but we also all know he's going to lose because The Undertaker had been booked to lose for the first time ever, have his streak broken at WrestleMania, at Mania 30 the year before, and there was no way they were going to have the Undertaker lose two WrestleManias in a row to begin a new streak, a losing streak at WrestleMania. But just think, if they had Taker beat Lesnar. Now, obviously, that was a whole thing, was a completely different kind of thing. If you have that happen, then Lesnar's stratospheric rise never happens, never takes place. We don't have him squash Cena at SummerSlam that same year. He doesn't have that amazing triple threat match with Rollins and Cena at the Rumble. He doesn't have that match with Reigns. Rollins never has a reason to run in and cash in Money in the Bank. And what is undoubtedly one of the top WrestleMania moments ever, Seth's cash in at the Mania of WrestleMania 31. But there is an alternate universe in which they put both Taker over Brock at Mania 30 and Wyatt over Taker, over Cena, excuse me, at WrestleMania 30. And then, I mean, he's a megastar if you have Wyatt cause Cena to have a mental break and turn heel by attacking him with a chair at WrestleMania. If Bray causes that, well, then the world's his oyster. Like, he's a megastar forever. He's made. And then you can have him be the guy who beats Taker's streak at Mania 31 and steals the Undertaker's spot. Now, the Undertaker wasn't on his last legs, his last run, his last ride. He only had two more manias left in him at that point, because honestly, Mania 33, that same night, was the night that Taker probably should have retired. He left all of his shit in the ring, like his hat and his gloves and his coat, and left him in a little pile in the ring, and he walked halfway up the ramp and sunk down it with his hand thrown over his head, and the night he lost Roman Reigns. So you could have, you know, had him do two more manias as Biker Taker after Bray stole his spoopy powers. Certainly could have done that, but instead, no. And Mania 32 in Dallas, he was supposed to have a feud with Brock Lesnar, the reports say. But instead, Lesnar had that match with Ambrose, so maybe it's a good thing that Bray didn't have that match with Lesnar. But instead, he had a segment, not a match, a segment with The Rock, where The Rock called him fat. Hey, fat, you're a fatty, fat. And I'm sure that was fun. That must have felt good. Must have felt good for old Bray. And then he didn't have the match. Rowan had the match with The Rock and got rock bottomed and lost in 2 seconds. And then Cena showed up too, just to rub some salt in the wound. Mania 33 was, of course, this match with Randy Orton. And Mania 34 was him coming back from a long absence and helping Matt Hardy to win the battle royal, and then they became best friends and teammates, and they had all those great ideas. To hear Matt Hardy tell the tale, they had all these great ideas about what to do, and then they were all shut down. So then he went away, Bray did, and came back with the Fiend, and they had a great build up, all those amazing vignettes. Who is this Bray Wyatt? Is Mr. Rogers now? What the hell? And eventually it's come to know that he's a vessel for the Fiend, which is a really cool, creepy thing. The first time you ever saw that mask, I mean, that was just, my God, the juxtaposition of Mr. Rogers' character with this demon. It's so great. And then he had his first match. I did a whole thing on Sour Graps, early Sour Graps, back in October, which you can find, which was a whole deep dive on The Fiend and how they built him and then how they screwed him up. They screwed him up even in October. But the first time he ever came down the ring to have a match, remember that? Where they played his brand new theme? How creepy that thing was? Where it's a retread of his old catching flies in his mouth theme. But he comes down to the ring. And remember the first time? Do you remember the first time that you saw that the Fiend was carrying old Bray Wyatt's head, severed head, fashioned into a lantern? Do you remember that? Because I do. That was one of the best moments of wrestling in my life, because it made me feel things again. I'm a cynic. I'm completely jaded. This is who I am when I'm watching wrestling. I want it to be great, but I know it won't be. And I wish I'd have those feelings. But that moment where they said, holy shit, he's carrying his head, his old character's head, as a lantern. He killed his old character, hollowed out his skull, and is using it as a lantern. That's fucking cool. It's very rare that wrestling makes me say stuff like that anymore. And so the world was his oyster. He squashed Finn. He changed him, sent him back to Full Sail. And then, you know, they hot-shotted him into a program with Seth for the title, which we all knew was a bad idea at the time. And then he ended up actually fighting the Hell in a Cell match, which was just awful. And then they further ruined him by having him become... They ruined him by having him become the champion. Because of the way they did it. With the red lights and kicking out of all those finishers and... Then he had the programs with Daniel Bryan and The Miz, and so highs and lows, but really not a lot of great. So when they book him to get squashed by Goldberg of all fucking people at Sands of Time, you could be forgiven for thinking that they're done with him, and that any great ideas he might have gone. But a pandemic happens. I say a pandemic happens because you know for a fact, if they were doing this thing regular, like in front of 80,000 fans in Tampa, there's no way they do a Firefly Funhouse match for the whole thing, where everybody who's sitting there in the arena looks up at the Jumbotron to watch this. No, they never do that. Their backs are against the wall, and they figured out something to do that they could, because they had to do something different. It would have just been, you know, collar and elbow tie-ups and rest holds, and there's no way we get this match, this thing, the Firefly Funhouse match, if there isn't a pandemic going on. And also, as much as we all said, God, why the hell would you have Goldberg beat him for the title? That ruins everything. You could have had Bray Wyatt versus John Cena, that grudge match, with the added thing of John Cena beating Bray would have meant that he would have beaten Flair's record and become the 17-time world champion. Like, if you have it for the 17-time world championship, there's no way it's a short film featuring puppets. It would actually have to be a real match. So with that, I guess it's actually good that they took the title off of Bray so he'd get this thing, because otherwise you wouldn't have this. You'd have just, you know, collar and elbow tie-ups and rest holds and John Cena kicking out of a Sister Abigail and hitting him with one AA and winning. Instead, we have this. So thank you, Goldberg, for being an asshole and refusing to job to the guy in the mask because you thought the kids wouldn't believe it or whatever. And thank you, Bray, for being a good soldier and saying, yeah, sure, it's fine, whatever. I'll lose to the 53-year-old guy who can't even get me up for a jackhammer. Yes, I will lose to him. That's fine, whatever. But if I do, can I wrestle John Cena? I don't know. I don't know what they had planned at the time. When The Fiend came out in that weird segment and... Cena's like, I'm not going to wrestle WrestleMania this year because I believe in the future. And then Bray comes out, this Fiend comes out and points at the sign, and Cena vigorously tips his cap. At that moment, there's no way they had this planned. This was something they were backed into. And thank God they were. So I'm going to do something a little different here because I don't want to miss anything. I don't want to forget anything. I'm going to go in and I'm going to watch the match and pause it when I need to just to talk about specific parts of it that are directly related to the artfulness of this, because it really was. I mean, it's a brilliant idea. And first of all, I do want to say to John Cena, props, because this does not cast him in a good light. It takes a lot for a man to recognize, oh yeah, this is pointing out all the bad things about me, and I'm cool with that. That's rough. That's rough. That can be certainly very rough. So good on you, John Cena, for recognizing it. Now I'm going to push play here on the network, WWE Network. You can follow along if you're so inclined, but you won't hear it coming out of my end. So no copyright strikes. So John comes out and he's doing his, and he does the Welcome to WrestleMania bit, right? He thinks he's coming out for a real match. Welcome to WrestleMania. There's nobody here. He's saying to the crowd, he's a little weird. And then, of course, we get that little weird spot where it's like they show film of Vince McMahon saying WrestleMania and Gene Okerlund saying Welcome to WrestleMania. And it's all intercut with all these creepy things, and it's all weird and grainy, and the film burns up, and then we get Firefly Funhouse and Bray in the Firefly Funhouse. Speaking of the Firefly Funhouse, the thing that I hated the most about what they did with Bray back in the fall was that one night that they had Seth Rollins say, I'm going fiend hunting. And then he went and he found it. He just found it. It was back there the whole time. I mean, come on. The Firefly Funhouse is just a place? It's just a room in the back of every arena where you can just walk into it. There's no security. There's no nothing. It's just a set somebody built in a back room of the arena. That's it? That's it. No, it's got to be a place in Bray Wyatt's mind. It's got to be this, what we see at WrestleMania. That's what's inside the Firefly Funhouse. You can't just get there unless he magics you there. That's the only way I feel like you can actually do the Firefly Funhouse. But of course, Seth Rollins had to find it so he could beat up Bray, so he could light it on fire because, burn it down. That's what Seth does. He burns things down. He's an arsonist. He's a pyromaniac, and that's why we love him. But just imagine. Just imagine if we never got that. We never were forced to see that. The reduction of the Firefly Funhouse, this amazing idea that it was, into, it's just a room. There's a room anybody could find their way into. It's fine. That's not great. But if we had never seen it, and this was the first time you ever saw it, God, it would make it even that much better. That we would have just wondered, how do you get to the Funhouse? Where is it? And here's where it is. But Bray does the welcoming. He says this place, the Firefly Funhouse, is a very very important place where all of your darkest fears are brought to light, and your true self. It's a place where all these demons and gods and angels and devils, they all live together. They're all neighbors, and that's really cute. But it's interesting that that's what Bray believes the Firefly Funhouse is, not a room where a bunch of puppeteers are there working their magic. It's not, Children's Television Workshop or whatever. Jim Henson did not come up with this shit. It's all in his brain. And I like that a lot. But he's saying you're going to come up against your worst opponent, yourself. It's perfect. And of course, then Bray leaves the door, and the door has a little kid's sign that's been mocked up: "Abandon all hope, all ye who exit here." Now, this is something I never even thought of before, but That's the same door he enters and exits from during every episode of the Firefly Funhouse. So the Firefly Funhouse, the actual little room with the flowers on top of the old TV and the window that Sister Abigail sits in, and where Ramblin' Rabbit hides out and gets, you know, pulverized in a blender or whatever. That's the front-facing part of it. That's the facade. But behind that wall, through that door, that's where the real shit starts. And that's really creepy, that's where Bray lives. He lives in there. He comes and goes through that door, but he lives in that part of the Firefly Funhouse. And then, you know, as we said, John Cena is magicked in there, and he's weirded out by it, and Ramblin' Rabbit gives him a little speech. Ramblin' Rabbit, by the way, okay, so the great Brandon Stroud, who writes for Up Rocks, is actually one of the reasons I started doing this, because he and I, the idea of, I wanted to get into wrestling critique, wrestling criticism, and that's where the idea came from, was reading his stuff at Up Rocks. He had a great point of view on the puppets. Obviously, Sister Abigail, we know Sister Abigail is. Mercy the Budger is the old version of Bray Wyatt, the guy in the Hawaiian shirt who everyone said was based on Waylon Mercy. Huskus the Pig Boy is Husky Harris, which is a representation of Bray's damaged psyche, remembering being that little fat kid that nobody liked. And how he just wanted everybody to like him, but he was just a little fat kid, and he remembers this embarrassing remembrance of his horrible, awkward years. That's who Huskus the Pig Boy is. But who's Ramblin' Rabbit? He never played a character like that. And Stroud's conceit is that it's his love of wrestling. And that's why, no matter what they do to Ramblin' Rabbit, put him in a blender, hit him with a mallet, chainsaw him, whatever you do with him, no matter what you do, you can't kill him. He keeps coming back. No matter what they do to Bray Wyatt, his love of wrestling never dies. And that's why he keeps coming back and trying to do this, because you can't kill that part of him on the inside. It'll never die. I think that's a really, really great way of looking at it. So anyway, Cena's weirded out by the little puppets and everything, and he goes to the door, and he winds up in this dark room where he is accosted by the Vince puppet. And somehow, there's a first time for everything, right? I'm going to give credit to Vince, because they came to him with his idea, we want to make a puppet out of you. It looks just like you, except it has devil horns. And it eats money. It loves money. It says things like, that's good shit. So we are making fun of you. And Vince said, yeah, that's good. That's good shit. That takes a lot, because he was well within his rights, and certainly you would even expect him to say, nope, you're not doing that. I'm not letting that happen. No, you could do whatever you want, but keep me out of it. But he didn't. He signed off on it, so good for him. There's a lot of bosses out there who wouldn't do that, who do not have a sense of humor about themselves, but good for Vince that he does. Because he shows up, starts poking Cena in the chest. Do you have what it takes? Do you have enough ruthless aggression to be the guy who steps up? And if you don't, you're fired. It's good. And then we see Bray in the ring as Kurt Angle. Like, it's intercut with all these black and white stuff, Kurt Angle. And he's doing the same speech that gets Cena to come out and make his debut. And then Cena comes out past the fist, which they found in storage, which I did not know storage was in Orlando, but that's pretty awesome. And he's wearing his ruthless aggression attire, and he comes out, and then Bray asks the question, makes you think that you have what it takes to hang with Bray Wyatt instead of saying Kurt Angle? And then Cena, who, by the way, looks as jacked as he did when he was, you know, 18 years ago, whatever that was. But he gets in the ring, and ruthless aggression, he throws the punch like he did against Kurt Angle, except for this time Bray ducks. And I love that Bray says, I didn't think it was going to be this easy. Whoever thought this was actually going to work is what he says. I got him. He's playing right into my hands. This is awesome. I love how Bray's excited about it. Like, he's like, this is really going to work. Fantastic. I can't believe I'm actually going to beat John Cena. He's laid out this perfect plan. This, somebody said this on Twitter. I forget who it was. It was because it was a week ago. But they said this was it. This is that moment where Luke in Empire Strikes Back goes, like Yoda says, you have to go into that dark part of the Dagobah, whatever it is, because inside is your greatest fears. And he sees Darth Vader and he fights Darth Vader, and then he slices off Darth Vader's face, and inside the helmet is Luke's face. Like, that's this scene. That's John Cena getting to figure all this out. And it's a perfectly set plan by Bray, and Bray's so excited it's working. Because all stupid young John Cena can do is just yell ruthless aggression and take wild swings at Bray. And he says, you're actually reliving your one biggest failure right now. Now, they mean this thing where he loses to Kurt Angle. Well, that's not his one biggest failure. No, expect him to beat to beat Kurt Angle. His one biggest failure is the thing that Bray references next, where he swings again and he ducks again and he says, "You can look, but you can't touch." Right? Nikki Bella's theme. His one biggest failure is that he said, "Yes, Vince, okay, fine. I didn't want to get married again, but I will propose to my girlfriend in front of millions of people all over the world. I'll get down on one knee and I'll propose to my girlfriend Nikki Bella because you want me to. Okay, fine." I mean, I don't know if that's the reason, but that's the reason I've always thought that it was going to be really great shit, pal. So they said, yes, would you consider doing it? And because John is the ultimate couple man, he says yes. So he gets down on one knee and he proposes to Nikki Bella, and she says yes, because the whole thing's fucking staged. But the relationship isn't staged. The relationship is a real relationship, and it falls apart because I think the engagement was probably based on some kind of, not a lie really, but whatever. And we always hear that Nikki Bella wanted kids and John didn't. So she broke up with him. She found somebody else. They're getting married now and she's pregnant. So yeah, it's a giant failure on Cena's part. Maybe the relationship was always doomed, but that weird, like, there had to have been a conversation with, like, why would you agree to propose to me in the middle of the ring at WrestleMania if you weren't going to follow through with it and do all the things we talked about doing? And John is like, well, because Vince asked me to. I think that must have, I believe there was something like that happened. And so John recognizes that was his greatest failure, doing that. And not only in the ring, like as a wrestler, but in life. And the fact that he agreed to let Bray bring it up, even in an oblique manner, means something, that he's able to see that side of him. It's great. It's great. But of course, you know, WrestleMania 33 is when it happened. And where did we talk about earlier today? WrestleMania 33 is where Bray put projector worms in the ring and thought that was going to be enough to beat Randy Orton. I mean, he didn't, but they thought that he would think that, and that's one of his greatest failures. They had the same great failure on the same night in the same place. So, after this, he just keeps swinging, keeps missing, and eventually he chases Bray out of the ring, and then we cut to Vince Puppet and Mercy Puppet as Randy Savage, and they do Saturday Night's Main Event, and so it's the 80s, and this is the thing, what John used to be called the prototype, right? Well, the prototype for what? For being a wrestler. He was supposed to be the next perfect thing. that Vince could use and mold and just be whatever he wanted him to be. And who's the model for that originally? Hulk Hogan. So we do this scene where we have, you know, we call him Johnny Large Meat. And that's the thing, is that back in the 80s, all you needed to be was just big, muscly, didn't have to be good. Wrestling, you weren't supposed to be good at wrestling. You do the move that everybody expects, you play to the crowd, everybody goes home happy. That's it. That's Hulk Hogan to a T. Big boot, leg drop, pose, everybody goes home. Everybody loved Hogan. And so John Cena, I think, for a while, probably believed he needed to be that. So this is what this scene is, but it's what I love. It gets very, very... What I love about it is that it's so wacky and weird and trippy. It's like a freaking acid trip. I love it. But, Cena's doing the curls as fast as possible. That's really great. And Wyatt's just looking at it like, oh my god, it's so yeah. But then he stops doing the pumps, and he tries to take another swing at Wyatt, but he can't move his arms because he's blown out, and that's great. But then Wyatt channels Hulk Hogan, says, "What you gonna do, brother? When you realize that egomania has been running wild on you?" And this is where we get into the thing, like John Cena recognizing that, oh crap, maybe I've been wrong about who I am and how I fit into the world. So then we get into word life, the Dr. Thuganomics, and he still looks great in that stupid getup, man. He does. It somehow looks good on him. The oversized baseball jersey. The padlock on a chain, the backwards cap, big old wristbands, those rings. And he comes down to the ring, and John Cena recognizes the game at this point. He says, "Oh, I can only talk in rhyme, right? Oh. Oh, well, the audience is in mind. They're excited. They just went from 6 to midnight." And then there's silence because it's an empty arena. But they play One Child Giggling. Now, the implication of that I love, because this guy's ostensibly he's a character for kids, right? Not this character, not Dr. Thuganomics, but John Cena always was loved by kids or whatever, but kids still loved Dr. Thuganomics, even though they didn't understand, because the kid doesn't understand that 6 to midnight is a dick joke. They don't understand that. They don't understand what 6 to midnight would be. But kids loved him because the adults loved him. And they didn't recognize that Cena was being really hurtful, just like the schoolyard bullies that they hate, because they didn't understand the implications of what he was saying. They just saw all the adults thinking he was cool and was like, well, then I have to think he's cool too, not realizing that they were like, yes, bullying is great, until they were not 6 anymore, but 12. And being like, yeah, bullying is cool. I should bully people. And then they're 18 and they're like, I mean, just it's a weird implication when you have kids grow up on Vince McMahon's ideal of who heroes are, who they turn into as they get to be older is not great people. They turn into this. They turn into Dr. Thuganomics, not literally, but somebody who, as Bray says, you just make fun of people. Like he makes fun of his weight. He says, you know, I'm like Husky Harris, that's a weight that I can manage. And Bray stands there just sitting there taking it. Just taking it. And he's talking like he's talking about how he is a slut for opportunity. He blows it every chance, right? Well, of course, Bray turns that around on him and says, "I don't know what you're doing, John. You're talking about opportunity. How dare you talk to me about opportunity? You've been given everything. I've had to work for everything in my life, and still they're taking from me." just like they had Goldberg take the title from him. I've worked my ass off to get back to this point. I built this character from scratch. I took the ashes of what I was before that they burned up and scattered to the winds and said, fuck that, it doesn't work anymore. You're on your own. And Bray said, fine, I'll take whatever I can patch up from that. I'm going to build something brand new. It's going to be the biggest thing in wrestling. And it was. And then they still fucked it up. He's had everything he's ever had, he's had to fight for. Unlike John, who is given opportunity after opportunity and over and over and over again. But I love the music they put under Bray's accusatory stuff to John. You're the golden goose, John. Chances are unlimited. You're untouchable. You're not a hero. You're a horrible person. You take people's weaknesses and you turn them into jokes. You're a bully. You're not a nice guy. I want you to see that about yourself. And if you could recognize that about yourself, maybe you can change. That's basically what he's saying. So this is your last chance to see that, to recognize it, and make a change. Do you want to make a change, John? It's your last chance. The floor is yours. And of course, what I love about this is that John takes a second, sees it, recognizes it, and then makes a conscious decision not to change. Everything that I've ever been has always worked for me, so why would I change? So he attacks Bray. Makes a D's nuts joke and attacks Bray. And Bray, because it's his world, he's magic here. He disappears out of his way, teleports to behind him. He has somehow, during the teleporting, removed the padlock chain from around John's neck. Now it's wrapped around Bray's fist. One punch knocks him out. But there's this wonderful moment where John recognizes what this is, what about it is, and he makes a decision to not do it. And so then he starts back in with, you in the doctor's house! And they come across to Bray. And Bray sitting there waiting, wondering, is this it? And have I gotten to him? And as soon as John starts in with the doctor's house thing, he looks up. And his eyes are very shaded. Like, there's the twitch where, like, now I got him. I gave him a shot, and now I get to kill him. And that's... there's something... the fiend lives in Bray Wyatt. And in that moment, when Bray looks up at John, when John decides not to make a change, you can see the fiend in Bray's eyes. Bray is an amazing actor. An amazing actor. I'm kind of shocked they haven't done anything with him as far as that goes, like putting him in a movie or whatever. But, you could easily play. You could have done a series of movies of making the Wyatt family into a bunch of killers that everyone tries to find in the swamps of Louisiana or whatever. But now, speaking of the Wyatt family swamps of Louisiana, you get a little shot of old Bray back in that little shack where he used to do all the promos. He's wearing the hat and the shirt and the white pants. He's the Max Cady character from Cape Fear. It's a perfect representation of what this old guy was, and he's talking in the same way he used to. Talking about how Sister Abigail gave me a prophecy I was supposed to fulfill. I had the whole world in my hands. There's a point where he says, I was a splash of red in a world of black and white. Black and white. And that's perfect, because later on in the NWO segment, he wears NWO red, and John wears NWO black and white. So I just thought that was a cute little touch. But there, I had the whole world in my hands, and... Sister Abigail told me this was all going to work. It was all set up. They showed the film, and you really can tell. Like, it's just, I was supposed to win. Everybody knew Bray was supposed to win. That's good storytelling to build this new, brilliant. Like, they were starved for a brand new, really cool heel. Young, he was like 25 at the time. You knows how far he could have gone. But No, I got to. Cena wins, LOL. But if you watch the film, man, the crowd wanted Bray to win. They needed Bray to win. As he says right here, he says, they wanted me. They needed me. You were supposed to be a man of the people, John. The people loved you, but they loved me more, but you wouldn't give it to them. You wouldn't do the thing they wanted you to do. You got another chance.
It's just the way that it's all put together is so ominous. It's so good. They show Bray conducting the crowd, whole world in his hands, and John, if he could have gotten John to snap and hit him with that chair, then he would have won. But can't win. Gotta lose. Cena wins. LOL. But yeah. It's a grandest failure because John wouldn't let him. Wouldn't let him win. I've been hurting so long I can't remember what it's like to feel. These are really good things. Now it's time to rewrite my own story. And then now we're back in the ring. He's wearing that getup. He gets out of the rocking chair. He attacks John. He puts him in Sister Abigail. Does that little dance version of it. And then the same way it happened at WrestleMania 30. He's about to do Sister Abigail, but Cena just stands up out of it. And then they go, "Oh no, you can't hit the AA on me now. That's not going to be enough to finish. Not now. So how about you take the chair?" And you do the thing you're supposed to have done 6 years ago. And 6 years ago, you made the wrong choice, cowboy. It's brilliant. Love it. Finish me. They keep cutting back from Bray 6 years ago. Finish me. To Bray now. Fix it. Finish me. Fix it. Finish me. Fix it. God, it's so good. And then this Cena, this John Cena, he snaps. And he swings. He tries to murder Bray Wyatt. But Bray Wyatt disappears. And now he's really got him. And we cut to Monday Nitro. Which seems like it's out of the blue. Like, who knows what the hell this is. But then you recognize. If John Cena had turned heel, it would be the biggest, most important heel turn since Hulk Hogan joined the NWO. So There had to have been a guy like an Eric Bischoff, Bray Wyatt here, who says, "Oh man, I want to introduce to you the coolest dude who ever worked in the wrestling business, John Cena, Hulk Hogan." And then John Cena comes out in the NWO, and he's got the belt with the NWO spray painted on it, playing it like a guitar, doing a Kyle O'Reilly. And, the too sweet and everything, but this is the point where the puppet Vince says that's such good shit. The puppet said the thing, you guys. The puppet said the thing. How can you not love this? But then John Cena snaps and decides to attack Bray again, but Bray lets him. Bray doesn't teleport away. And as Cena is raining down punches all over Bray Wyatt. We see intercut with film of the NWO. We see all of John Cena's greatest failures. Losing to The Miz when Randy Orton won the unification title. He had to put over Roman Reigns a couple years ago. That was a big thing. What else? There's all these little intercuts. Oh, if Cena wins, re-riot. That thing from the Van Damme match. Oh, that time where he lost at Mania to The Rock and like moped up on the ramp for a while. Him getting beat to hell by Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. The one where he lost to AJ Styles and left his wristband in the ring.
And then remember AJ Styles wore that around as a headband for a couple of weeks? And then, of course, the very best one is the shot of Cena climbing over the barricade to leave with the title and blowing a kiss to Vince. If Punk and Cena have one last match each, I want it to be against each other. Just because. Just have them start the build the Monday after Royal Rumble and continue it all the way to WrestleMania and have them have one last match against each other. That's what I want. Those promos would be fire. Well, we can't because John Cena's dead now. Because the Fiend killed him. Or at least made him wink out of existence. But here's the thing. He's lost it. He's punching everybody, ruining. He's been punching everybody. He's beating up Bray Wyatt. And then he realizes it's not Bray Wyatt because now it's Huskus the Pig Boy. It's a puppet. It's a pig puppet. It's this. He's. John Cena stops himself from beating up a stuffed puppet, a pig puppet. Looks at his hands like, what have I done? John Cena has realized his own crippling hubris while beating up a stuffed pig. But it's not just any stuffed pig. It's Huskus the Pig Boy, who is Husky Harris, who was in the Nexus, who John Cena buried all by himself. So the idea that John now would say, I'm in for the future. Well, you had a shot to put over the future 10 years ago, and you didn't, John. Maybe if you had, things would be a little different around here. But nobody who was in the Nexus, that version, not Daniel Bryan, but nobody who was in the Nexus at the time could get a bump from that because John Cena wouldn't put him over. Who knows how many of those guys would be huge stars right now if they had gotten that initial boost that from that lift from John Cena putting them over. Who knows? We may never know. Yeah. That moment when John Cena realizes who he is when beating to death the Nexus. That's pretty amazing. And of course now the Fiend has him where he wants him. The Fiend sneaks up behind him. Mandible Claw gets him in place for the Sister Abigail. Then we actually hear John Cena's words. This WrestleMania, we're gonna end forever the most overhyped, overprivileged, overhyped, overprivileged. The guy who got all the chances. Yeah, we're gonna end that guy. But that guy, as we hear, is. Yes. Ending the existence of overhyped, overvalued, overprivileged, super in existence. And yes, now we have ended that person. And that person is not Bray Wyatt. That person is John Cena, who gets Sister Abigail'd, then Mandible Clawed, and his shoulders go to flat on the mat, and he is counted out by Bray Wyatt as the Fiend pins John Cena. And then Bray Wyatt looks at the camera after having countered the pinfall and cackles, and the Fiend stands up, holds out his arms, and John Cena disappears into the Phantom Zone, where he's been tweeting from all week. I don't know what the plans are for John Cena from here on out, but if that was his last match, he has tweeted something out like, if it is the last time, always leave him guessing. That's great, man. I don't think it's the last time, but it should be. That'd be the greatest way ever for him to recognize who John Cena has been this whole time. And in that moment, know he's got to go out. Brilliant. Utterly brilliant. Now, we wondered at the time, what are we getting now for The Fiend? And it looks like we're getting Braun Strowman for The Fiend, which I would be... I am in against, because I don't want The Fiend near the title ever again. It makes sense that Bray Wyatt would want it back since he had a job to Goldberg to lose it, but the title just doesn't work for The Fiend. Because then you're just waiting for The Fiend to lose again, and that's not right. The Fiend should only be doing this kind of stuff. He just shouldn't be having matches. Maybe Bray Wyatt could have matches. but not the Fiend. The Fiend should only do this kind of stuff. The only Fiend only appears when you let him in or when he asks you to come in and you accept the challenge. But the promo we got between Bray and Braun was really great. The Braun knowing full well who Bray is and what he's capable of and still being like, I gotcha. I'm good. Yeah, sure. I'll let you in. That's fine. But you can tell Braun's not super confident about it. And Bray being like, well, see, I brought you into this world. So I'm going to have to be the one to take you out. The way he said that gave me chills. He's a really great actor. So we'll see what happens with Bray and Braun. But man, I'm in love with The Fiend again, you guys. That may change in as early as a couple of weeks when they start ruining him again. But for now, that I can't think of a better piece of art that WWE has ever produced than this. Yeah, I am in awe of it. I hope you enjoyed our little watch along of the Fiend match, the Firefly Funhouse match. I'll be doing another thing. Like this with the Big Show show. It's going to be released next week. So it's different. It's not art. But yeah, I hope you liked it. This has been Sour Graps, a special edition of Sour Graps. Sweet Graps, because I love this so much. I hope you like our retro epic triggered rant. If you liked that enough, maybe I'll have to go out and find other ones to re-release. But I have been your host, Alex Pulaski. I love you all, Fightful Faithful. Stay safe out there. Thank you so much. And I mean, not this, but usually everything sucks.